You guys can turn to Genesis chapter 3. Our reading is going to be from Genesis chapter 3.
Genesis chapter 3, verses 1 through 7. Now the serpent was more crafty than any other beast of the field that the Lord God had made. He said to the woman, "Did God actually say, 'You shall not eat of any tree in the garden?'" And the woman said to the serpent, "We may eat of the fruit of the trees in the garden, but God said, 'You shall not eat of the fruit of the tree that is in the midst of the garden, neither shall you touch it, lest you die.' But the serpent said to the woman, 'You will not surely die, for God knows that when you eat of it, your eyes will be opened, and will be like God, knowing good and evil.' So when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, and that it was a delight to the eyes, and that the tree was to be desired to make one wise, she took of its fruit and ate, and she gave some to her husband who was with her, and he ate. And then the eyes of both were opened, and they knew that they were naked. They sewed fig leaves together and made themselves loincloths."
All right, so now we're into chapter 2. Our key word is revolt for this chapter. There's a lot of movies that my wife and I both like. Lord of the Rings is not one of them. I love Lord of the Rings. I love all of that story. Julie only likes the first 5 minutes. And the reason is that the first 5 minutes you are in Hobbiton and everyone is happy. And they are eating and they are growing things and they are smoking pipes and they are throwing parties. And everything is really wonderful and pleasant. But then 5 minutes in, they discover a ring. And all of a sudden, for the next 6 hours, humans and orcs are hacking each other to death. And I'm okay with that, but she's not. She does not like it when the wheels come off. Well, that's pretty much the story of the Bible at this point. The wheels come off after just about 5 minutes. And everything goes bad. And we enter into a time of great evil and violence and suffering. And so we're going to talk about what happened in this revolt. So humanity is created and put in paradise, a very good home for them. Everything is very good. And like we said, right at the center of this home, God plants a forbidden tree, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, as a gift so that Adam and Eve have the gift of choice. And God gives them that choice in Genesis chapter 2, verses 16 and 17. "For the Lord God commanded the man, saying, 'From any tree of the garden you may eat freely, but from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat. For in the day that you eat from it, you will surely die.'" So God gives a command. He gives a warning. You will surely die. In Hebrew, literally, you will die, die. You will experience death in all its forms. And now he has given the ball to Adam and Eve. Now they have a choice. Will they choose to obey or will they choose to rebel? Now, for a while they obey. We have no idea how long that lasted. But for a little while they are obeying God's plan, but then the enemy enters the story. So Satan comes in the guise of a snake. We learn from the book of Revelation at the very end that this is for sure Satan in the form of a snake. And he comes to tempt Adam and Eve. Now, there's not a lot we know about Satan. Surprisingly, the Bible really doesn't want to tell us a whole lot about the angelic kingdom. What we know is that he was created perfect, an angel, beautiful, majestic, in the presence of God, incredibly powerful. He was designed to glorify God, but he too had a choice. Would he choose to worship God or would he worship himself? And pride, he chose to worship himself. He fell. He became the enemy of mankind, the enemy of God, bent on destroying all God has made. And he comes to the garden to tempt Adam and Eve to do the same thing he did, which was to choose pride. Okay, so he comes to Adam and Eve in the passage that we just read, and he puts this choice before them. And there's a lot going on there. There's a lot we could say there. But the short end of it is he brings the moment to a head. Now they must choose. Will they trust and obey God, or in pride will they choose to reach out and take the forbidden fruit? And they do. They take the forbidden fruit. And the sad news that we see is that the root of all sin is pride. It's the root of all of your sin. It's the root of all of my sin. Ultimately, it's all about pride. Are we willing to trust God and let God be God, or are we going to put ourselves in his place? That's what Satan did. That's what Adam and Eve did. That was the ultimate revolt that brought about the fall of the human race. So Adam and Eve choose to eat the apple. And what is ironic is that Satan said, "You do this and you will be like God." They thought they would get divinity. Instead, they get death, just as God had promised. And it's important to understand that in the Bible, death, the word death, is rarely as one-dimensional as it is in English. You hear the word death and you think, well, your friend died, you know, bodily right there. Well, that, in Hebrew, it's a much broader term. There's lots of meanings, lots of forms, lots of nuances to death. And so when God said, if you eat it, you'll die, he meant you'll die in every sense of that word. And the death begins even before God shows up. We often jump to the curse. Well, actually, death is already starting. So we read a few moments ago this verse right after the sin. Then the eyes of both of them were opened, and they knew that they were naked, and they sewed fig leaves together and made themselves loin coverings. And everybody gets hung up on the nakedness part. It's not about nakedness. It's about shame. This is the beginning of shame. Okay, so verse 7, it's not that Adam and Eve were all into nakedness. It's that they were able to be naked because they didn't know what shame was. They could not comprehend shame towards another person. I can't fathom what that would be like, to not even have a word in my vocabulary for shame. And yet that's what they had. And so it allowed them to be naked and unashamed, but now they've lost that. And so they try, they're grabbing leaves, anything they can to isolate themselves, even from each other, from everything. They want to cover the shame. So immediately, shame enters the picture. That's the first form of death. Second thing that enters, verses 8 through 10, they heard the sound of the Lord God walking in the garden in the cool of the day. And the man and his wife hid themselves from the presence of the Lord God among the trees of the garden. Then the Lord God called to the man and said, "Where are you?" And he said, "I heard the sound of you in the garden, and I was afraid because I was naked, so I hid myself." I don't even know where Adam learned that word, because there was no such thing as fear before this. This is the entrance of fear into human existence. All of a sudden, humans have something to fear, a holy God, because they've rebelled against him. Never knew fear before this, knew only peace. Third thing that enters the human race as a result, this third form of death we see in verses 11 through 13. "Have you eaten from the tree of which I commanded you not to eat?" That's God asking. "The man said, 'The woman whom you gave to be with me, she gave me from the tree, and I ate.' Then the Lord God said to the woman, 'What is this you have done?' And the woman said, 'The serpent deceived me, and I ate.'" The third form of death that enters the human race is blame. Blame. We're no longer willing to take responsibility for ourselves. We're pushing it off on others. Eve blames the serpent. That's audacious. That's nothing compared to what Adam does. He blames Eve, and then he blames God, because God gave her to me. So pretty incredible, the shocking levels of blame that enter the human race at this point. So we've got shame, fear, and blame before God even shows up, and that's an important thing to pause on for a moment. So when you feel shame, or when people feel shame, fear, or blame, that's not God cursing them. That is how the universe is designed. So into the moral fabric of this universe, God designed actions to have consequences. God doesn't even need to show up, and people are already feeling shame, fear, and blame. It's a natural, unavoidable, absolutely inescapable consequences of sin. But then God does show up, and things get worse, because God begins to render his judgment. And so we're going to jump to verse 16. We'll come back to the preceding verses in a moment. "To the woman he said, 'I will greatly multiply your pain in childbirth. In pain you will bring forth children, yet your desire will be for your husband, and he will rule over you.' Then to Adam he said, 'Cursed is the ground because of you. And toil you will eat of it all the days of your life. Both thorns and thistles it shall grow for you, but you will eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your face you will eat bread till you return to the ground, because from it you were taken. For you are dust, and to dust you shall return.'" Now we have a number of forms of death that are explicitly described. These are curses from God. The first thing, death of labor. I think a lot of us are in jobs that maybe we don't enjoy, and we tend to think, man, my work is cursed. No, actually, work is not a curse. You were created to have work to do. God didn't design you to be bored all day. He created you with meaningful work. Unfortunately, that work has been broken by our choice to revolt. So Adam and Eve's labor, they each had labor, was broken, was cursed. So Adam, he was designed to till the garden, keep the garden so that they would have food and produce. Now his work is cursed with frustration and difficulty and pain. Eve was created to have this labor of bringing children into the world, and now it is cursed with pain and danger and risk and difficulty. Okay, so labor is cursed. This is the death of relationships. Next, or the death of labor. Next, the death of relationships. So we see Adam and Eve, husband and wife, and right from this moment, there begins to be tension between them. They desire, Eve desires Adam's place. Adam, if you look into the Hebrew, it is he is overbearing, he is dominating. You begin to have strife between men and women. This, though, is the beginning of all strife between all human beings and between humanity and creation itself. So we were designed to be in a symbiotic relationship with creation. Now we're in competition with each other and fighting with each other, and there's all kinds of horrible things that result. So our relationships with one another and with the earth are broken. Okay, so the death of relationships. Next, the death of our bodies. From dust you were taken, to dust you will return. Humanity was created with what we might call provisional immortality. We were created to live forever so long as we dwelt in the presence of God in the garden. As soon as Adam and Eve are kicked out of the garden, the natural processes of entropy begin, and their bodies begin to break down, and they begin to die just as you and I die. So physical death enters the picture at this point, but the worst of all, save it for the last, the worst of all is the death of our spirits. And we have to actually go further in the Bible. We have to look a little later in the Bible for the book of Ephesians. And we look at Ephesians chapter 2, verses 1 through 3, and Paul tells us really the worst news of all. You were dead in your trespasses and sins, in which you formerly walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, of the spirit that is now working in the sons of disobedience. Among them we too all formerly lived in the lusts of our flesh, indulging the desires of the flesh and of the mind, and were by nature children of wrath, even as the rest. What Paul is unpacking is something, theologically we call this depravity. The idea is that from Genesis 3 on, all human beings are born bent towards sin and separated from God. That's what we call spiritual death. Even though the body is alive, the spirit is dead. It is unable to please God, unable to commune with God. We are actually not part of God's family. We're born children of wrath, born separated from God and worthy of judgment. So this is the worst news of all. We look back over the curse of sin, and we find that whereas Adam and Eve thought that they would become like God, the exact opposite in every possible way has happened. Now humanity knows and experiences on a regular basis shame and fear and blame, and the labor that we were designed to enjoy is now cursed, and the relationships that we were designed to enjoy are now cursed, and our bodies are cursed and breaking down, and worst of all, our spirits are dead from birth on. Okay, so really bad news. The fun thing is that right in the middle of all the bad news is really, really good news. But you'll miss it if you don't look carefully. It's in veiled form. God is going to make an incredible promise. When he's talking to a snake, and so it's weird. We don't read it because it's to the snake, so why bother? But it's actually for us. It's incredibly important. When we look at Genesis 3, 14 and 15, the Lord God said to the serpent, "Because you've done this, cursed are you more than all cattle and more than every beast of the field. On your belly you will go, and dust you will eat all the days of your life. And I will put enmity between you and the woman, and between your seed and her seed. He shall bruise you on the head, and you shall bruise him on the heel." And here's a fascinating thing. If you study in Hebrew, the pronouns shift. So all the way until the things that I've underlined, it's about snakes and humans. And, I mean, we see that. I don't really like snakes. I don't think they like me. We got some enmity there. We got a cursed relationship there. But then at the very end, second half of verse 15, God switches and he talks about a singular man and a singular snake. He's not talking about snakes in general. He's talking about the one who's animating this snake. He's talking about Satan. And he's not talking about human beings in general. He's talking about one male descendant of Eve. They're going to strike each other. So the male descendant of Eve is going to crush Satan on the head, but Satan is going to bite his heel. And I've heard some people say, well, that's not a bad wound. No, this is in the days before antivenom. Snake bites you, what happens to you? You die. Doesn't matter where it bites you. So these are dual death blows. This is the first promise of the gospel. There would be one male descendant of Eve who would give his life to defeat our enemy, Satan. Now, do Adam and Eve know Jesus at this point? No. Not nearly enough information here. They don't know that that's coming. All they know is there is hope. From the very beginning, as soon as we fall into sin, there's hope. And one of the things that I want you to notice, just take a quick look, when God begins this curse towards the snake and human beings, notice that before he gets to cursing us, he gives this promise of hope. Right from before even rendering judgment, he is already promising the solution. Okay, so there is good news mixed in with the really bad news. As you well know, the arrival of that one male descendant of Eve is still a long ways away. This is way back in prehistory. We don't know how long ago this was that these events were happening. So we know we have a long ways to go to get to Jesus, but at least we have some hope. Unfortunately, as we continue to move through Genesis, things get worse really quickly. So human beings are quick studies when it comes to evil. So in chapter 3, we are taking fruit that doesn't belong to us. In chapter 4, we're killing each other. So two brothers, Cain and Abel, one kills the other. So we've graduated into murder, and things continue to get worse. Humanity gets so violent and evil that God must wipe out humanity and hit reset through a flood. He delivers the family of Noah to start afresh. And yet very quickly, humanity descends into evil again, and we arrive at the Tower of Babel. This seemingly strange story where humanity's uniting together to build a tall tower. Why? Why do you want to build a tall tower? What's the root of all sin? Pride. Build a tall tower so you can kick God off the throne. You get to be at the top of the universe. So humanity unites together in pride. And what we notice if you read through the first 10 chapters of Genesis is that every single time humanity unites without God, it always results in sin. Every time we just, human beings try to work together, but God is left out, it always ends up in evil. Okay, so God decides, all right, if you're going to only ever unite in sin, I'm going to scatter you. And so that's what happens at Babel. God divides humanity into its different language groups, different racial groups. We're divided out. And the important thing to see is that that's actually a gift. That's actually grace. Because when we could all get along, we all got along with evil. So he's going to spread us out, and he's going to choose one and save us all through that one. And that's where we're headed. But before we do that, let's pause for a bit and do the next set of questions. So you've got another 10 minutes to work on that next set of questions. I want you to think some about what you've learned in Genesis 3 and how it relates to your life. So again, if somebody with a watch will watch the time, 5 minutes for each question, that would be great.